welcome to Linux Lads, Season 6, Episode 20. I know you haven't heard my voice in a while. It's good to be back. It's good to be back in the virtual studio with Mike and Connor. Say hello, chaps.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, you're probably sick of hearing my voice doing the intros. So it's good to have Shane back.
Yeah, so the DIY nightmare is finally at an end, almost, until the next one. So yeah, but I'm now pleasurably sitting here in a lovely, fantastic wood floor office with my with everything set up permanently, and I won't have to stash it in a different room for a while and then blow dust off it for about 3 weeks.
And also, I'm noticing you're starting to do a bit of a Joe Resington because of a guitar in the background.
Yes, yes. For those of us who can't see, yeah, I'm getting mad into music on Linux. So, but we'll get to that, I suppose. First up, Mike, I'm going to go to you first. You're using GNOME with no extensions. Explain yourself.
I've done two things in the past. First, I thought I'll give this Fedora Kinoite, which is the immutable kind of version with KDE, I'll give this a try. And that didn't work anywhere as much as I would like it to on my home laptop. So I thought, okay, I'll replace it with Silverblue, which is same but with GNOME. And that works kind of nice. And then on my work laptop, KDE literally blew up. I updated, rebooted, and all the Qt UI elements were just mohusive, and everything else stays the same size. And I didn't have time to obviously debug it or fix it. So on both, I now am running GNOME, and I was thinking, well, every time I run GNOME, I eventually get fed up with it because the extensions make the desktop environment stutter or something else caused by the extensions happen. So I thought maybe I just don't need the extensions. And so far, it looks like that I actually don't need the extensions. The one I'm missing most is obviously the one that makes gives you a status icon set. So notification badges for things like Mattermost, Telegram, or Matrix, that kind of thing. But it looks like I can do without it. So it's actually not a bad experience.
Manjaro GNOME, anytime that I've used it, I think is a very good balance between the two. They add quite a lot of extensions, but they also keep some of the UX elements, you know, the transitions, and they're faithful. It's not like not like what Zorn OS are doing, where they take GNOME and then they customize it so it pretty much resembles Windows with the taskbar at the bottom and then a menu. So they're not changing the UI too much, but they're adding enough extensions to make, in my opinion, GNOME usable. GNOME is a weird quirky one, because when you alluded it to it there, Mike, when you said that the GNOME devs aren't exactly happy with it, then why have the extensions in the first place? The GNOME developers are confusing from my point of view, because they're like, okay, they have a vision, they are going in a certain direction, whether you agree with it or not. They're very opinionated, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I commend Elementary OS when they do that. They have their vision, they have their design principles, and they say stick to our design principles, so on. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. But then why have the third party extensions? And then when you have have support for third party extensions, then it's almost like they're like, we may break something that a third party extension relies on. We don't care.
Well, they are kind of, yeah, it is a bit of a schizophrenic approach. On one side, and the thing is, the GNOME project is obviously a collection of people, so you hear someone saying this, another person saying that, right? But they do, I think they cannot afford to turn the extensions off, even if they all wanted to, because that would, the furore that would cause would probably not be worth it for them. And they do have some attempts to help extension developers. There was something last year when they tidied up, I think, the API. And now if your extension is going to stop working, I think at least you'll be able to prepare for it. I'm not sure. I'm not an extension developer. But it is a kind of approach where on one side they are almost accommodating the need for something, but not exactly. So, yeah, I'd rather see somebody actually making a more like an application that would accommodate some plugins or extensions or some extra functionality to GNOME that wouldn't be done the way the extensions are, because the way the extensions are done, it makes your, as I said, it makes your desktop environment stutter sometimes. They don't always work nice. And it's obviously, After a short while of using them, it just feels like a massive bolt-on. So maybe a whole rethink is needed.
GNOME extensions were first introduced when GNOME 3 came out, and what was that? Almost a decade ago? My read of this, and of course they're probably never going to admit this, is they had a grandiose vision, and they said, okay, we're getting rid of GNOME 2 and we're going in this direction, and it's all going to be very swipey, and everything, like things come in from the side and notifications, and it all looks all nice and snazzy and things like that. But we realized that we've gotten rid of a lot of functionality that people have relied on in the past when they're used to GNOME 2. So if you want to implement those, then what we have these things that are called extensions, and we're going to support this. And then they realized, okay, after we've done all of the announcements on blog posts and we've built the thing and everything like that, this is going to be way more work than we thought it was going to be. So we're just going to focus on the core part of it and the core design of it, and then the extension support is going to be an afterthought. I doubt that they started off with this philosophy, but gradually over time they went, okay, extensions are nice and all, but we kind of are doing our own thing. But they'll probably, it's severely, as you said, there'll be a huge amount of backlash from the community. A severely bad PR move if they just come out and say, this extension thing really isn't working out. We're not really that gone on it anymore. It was more work than we thought it was going to be, and we're kind of just going off in our own direction. Bye, guys. See ya. We're not going to be supporting that anymore. The amount of backlash that would cause. So I say they're probably trying to quietly just say, extensions are not really something that we really support anymore, but we kind of do, but we kind of don't, and that our direction is kind of going off in this GNOME 4 or GNOME 40 direction, which I'm not criticizing them for. I mean, it looks very good. I actually prefer the look of this new GNOME 40 than I did for GNOME 3, especially in the beginning. GNOME 3 was god awful. Now it's tolerable in my point of view, but I won't criticize them for going off in a design direction, philosophical direction, the same reason why I don't criticize elementary OS for going off in their direction. Just because it's not for me does not mean that I criticize the endeavor.
Yeah, well said. Speaking of endeavors,
hey, Connor,
that was actually a good segue. The first time ever on the podcast, a segue actually worked out. You are using Endeavor OS Cinnamon and you're enjoying it.
Yeah, I was on Manjaro KDE, and KDE didn't break for me the same way that KDE broke for Mike. It was, and people kind of describe this when they encounter KDE, is a lot of little paper cut things. It's not one particular thing that annoys you, but a lot of little things do. And gradually, those have been less and less. I mean, if you speak to anybody who, Mike or Shane, you did probably attest to this. I was on KDE for actually quite a long time. I was actually surprised at myself how long I sticked around with it. So I'm like, yeah, it's doing the thing that I wanted to do. And I just noticed that gradually it's started stuttering and becoming slow, and not crawl to a halt. I mean, it was still fast, but it's like, I have a pretty beefy computer. There's no way that me launching an application should be, and then it launches. I'm like, it should be, well, launch. And little things like that, and the fact that there was UI bugs, I noticed that particularly with GTK-based applications, that it would draw a black window border surrounding the existing window border of the application. It would just do like almost like a big black bezel around it. And I was like, okay, I'm still able to interact with the application. I suppose I can put up with this. And little things like that. I'm like, okay, so I'm putting up with this thing, and then I'm putting up with this thing, and then I'm like, but okay, so what's my actual reason for using KDE? if there's about three or four things, I'm like, huh, okay, that's weird. Okay, I'll put up with that. Oh, okay, that's weird. Okay, I'll put up with that. And then I can't remember. I think I wanted to, I was like, okay, I'm going to change DE, but I'm not going to just install a different DE because I don't like doing that. Because let's say if you install, if you had a KDE install and then you installed GNOME or Cinnamon or XFCE or something on top of that, then you'll have a mixture of the default applications. You'd have Dolphin with Nautilus installed, and you'd have, it's just a mess. I don't like mixing DEs from that point of view. So then I went for Manjaro KDE Cinnamon, because I said, it's been a while since I've run Cinnamon. And that didn't seem to like booting up on my computer at all. I would get an intermittent thing where it was installed on my computer. Sometimes it would boot up perfectly fine to the graphical login, and I was able to log into the environment no problem. And sometimes it would boot up with just a blinking cursor. And I'm like, okay, I have no feedback on this whatsoever. I don't know why it's doing this intermittently. And then I was like, okay, well, since I'm in the mood for trying things, it's been a while since I tried Endeavor OS. So wipe Endeavor OS Cinnamon. And that is what I've been using for the past week or so. And it's been great. Closer to Vanilla Arch than Manjaro, obviously. So things could theoretically break more often than they do on Manjaro, but so far it's been so good. Obviously, updates are way more frequent. There's barely a day goes by without there actually being an updates available. I customized it a bit, as in I have installed Yay, and I've also installed PAMAC, which is the GTK Pac-Man UI that I think Manjaro maintain, but it's in the Arch repo, so I just installed that because that is what I'm used to from Manjaro, and I like the UI package manager, PAMAC, so I've installed that, but it's not part of the default Endeavor OS install.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've used Cinnamon. I always used to like it. On my end, I installed Pipewire, and it's great. I couldn't actually believe how simple it was. I mean, obviously there was a lot of kerfuffle getting it installed and getting it working properly, but not much. Like I just basically just skipped a few steps in the instructions by accident, and then that was my only issue. I just repeated the instructions and it worked just
fine.
What
are you installing it on? What are you running?
I'm using Zorin OS on my main PC now. I was using Pop OS, but there was a few little niggly issues here and there that I just didn't like. Mainly the Pop Shop. The Pop Shop was just terrible. It would stutter and freeze and crash constantly. Like I think about 80% of the time I would open it up, it would crash or freeze. Like it was so bad. So yeah, I was just getting a bit tired of Pop OS, and so Zorin seemed like a good compromise in terms of, you know, looking nice and, you know, not having too many options surfaced, but, you know, with the option to change shit around if you want. You could do that in Pop OS, but it's much harder to get to the settings in Pop OS, I find, than it is in other distros because of how it's designed. But anyway, to cut a long story short, I installed Pipewire, and oh my God, because I was messing around with Jack for the last few days, previous to that, and I was getting into like music, and as I said earlier, I was getting into music and stuff like that. So I was like messing about with Ardor and Jack, and, you know, using like the Hydrogen drum machine and messing about with synths and stuff like that. So I was following some of Unfa. I don't know if anybody follows Unfa on YouTube. He's like a Foss music production guru, basically. With some helpful links from Wayne of Binary Times fame, because he's crazy into his Linux audio as well. Yeah, it's a kind of a big rabbit hole to go down. There's a lot going on there. And some really impressive tools. If you can tolerate a little bit of jank, it's really, really fun. And you don't even really have to be into music. It's just the thrill of having a bunch of different programs that talk to each other and do different things. It's just really fun. And of course, the Jack backend, another recursive acronym, Jack Audio Connection Kit. That's basically like an audio server that just sits in the background and lets everything talk to each other. So you can have independent apps talking to each other and sending MIDI signals and audio signals and whatnot. It gets really dense. But Pipewire, the benefit of Pipewire was that I installed it and it essentially does the job of Pulse Audio and Jack at the same time, which is just amazing. If you've ever used Jack and then you just pop in Pipewire, you don't have to fire up your Jack server. You don't have to start it at all. It's just there, ready to go. And the Pipewire has basically like compatibility packages for Pulse Audio and for Jack. So it essentially just impersonates Pulse Audio and Jack. So it gets around any compatibility issues straight off the bat, because it just impersonates those systems. So, you know, your system has no idea that it's not really using Pulse Audio or Jack anymore. So that's really fun. And the signal routing and stuff is really interesting, because you can get this application Carla, which is kind of like a front end for Jack, if you like. Within that, you can have your patch bay, and you can also have a rack in there, like a rack of all sorts of different effects stuff and all sorts of things. But you can have your patch bay, basically, which is where you can route all your signals. So you can route, you know, the out to the ins and all that kind of stuff. So you can set with Pipewire, I opened it up, every single audio device on my system is just right there. And that didn't happen with Jack, which is nuts. Like, I could route the audio from a particular app to the HDMI kind of audio in my monitor, or I can route a completely different audio source to the speakers, and I can route like my microphone to my speakers. You can send anything anywhere. It's crazy. It's just, it's not like, in practical terms, it's not that useful, I guess, but you never know. Like, I mean, there's, who knows? But just really geeked out over that. And it works kind of flawlessly. But for a better kind of introduction to it, I would say check out Unfa on YouTube. Um, he he basically dropped in Pipewire, and by the end of his video he was like, please replace Jack with Pipewire, do it. Now there has been a bit of funniness. It's not all been plain sailing. My audio devices do appear kind of weirdly sometimes, and they don't always appear consistently. And I'll have like two audio devices, like audio inputs and outputs with the exact same name and things like that. It's weird. I don't really know. But for the most part, it just works. Like, you just install it and it's ready to go, which is crazy. Like,
I must say I have very little experience of any of that. Anytime that I've installed Jack, I'm like, oh, I'm way in over on my head here. Can I just go back to the simple thing, please?
Yeah. it gets very, very dense.
Yeah, it's Jack and Blender, two things that, or that kind of paradigm. It's too professional for my level of my ability. And
Same thing with Ardour or anything like that. But I'm like, nope.
I think I'm attracted to that type of stuff. Like, I think I'm mostly attracted to the kind of really complicated shit on Linux. I don't know why. Maybe it's like a challenge or something. But a friend of mine who makes like electronic music and computer music and whatnot. He uses mainly like Ableton, and he has a lot of hardware synths, like real actual physical objects, like synths and drum machines and sequencers and all this nonsense. And he just has a ton of shit on his desk, but then he routes it all through Ableton, and of course runs on Windows. So he doesn't have any of these issues. Like, it all just kind of works together. If you have a good enough computer, Ableton will just pick up all these devices, and you know, it'll be very fluid and there won't be any hacking that needs to be done. It's all just built in, ready to go in the software. So yeah, you don't really need, you can't, obviously you would use a lot of plugins and stuff like that, but for the most part, yeah, he just uses Ableton. So yeah, it's different. Like, it's, you have to be ready for a certain type of challenge when you go into audio on Linux. I mean, I don't know. I'm only scratching the surface myself, but yeah, there's a lot to it, and there's a lot of hackiness and a lot of jank and stuff, but it's really fun. Like, that's kind of the fun of it, is the jank, you know. So I suppose we need to talk about Linus, the other Linus.
Yeah. Again, we've already discussed him here, but he has
But not with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, not with you. And you have opinions. And there's been some... So, yeah, no, go on. Go ahead.
Mike, just let Shane run.
Yeah, just let Shane shout and let it all out. Yeah?
Just to fill everyone in who doesn't know, there's a YouTuber called Linus Sebastian in Canada. And he has Linus Tech Tips, the YouTube channel, and it's mostly Windows based stuff, you know, gaming and RGB and, you know, ridiculous computers that nobody could ever possibly afford, and you know things like that. But you know, I like it for the overkill factor. That's why I watch his channel. Like, that's the whole point for me. But he's doing a channel,
because
like, how am I ever going to have a PC that like six people can game on at the same time and all this shit? Like, I'm never going to do that. Like,
the way I see it is, it's the same thing of Top Gear reviewing a Ferrari that I can never
exactly
afford.
And you're never going to own that car, but you still like watching it, someone drive it. Like that's the whole point. But off topic. But basically, Linus and Luke from Linus Tech Tips are doing a challenge whereby they are going to use Linux as their daily driver on their main gaming PC, their personal rigs, and they have a list of challenges to complete, and they have to like use it for 30 days or else they have to dye their hair in the old Windows colors if they give up. Yeah, the old Windows, like the red, green, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, can't remember the colors, but they have to do that. But yeah, like, you know, I was very angry about this initially. I was like, oh, he's just like, he's fallen back on all the old tropes of like, oh, the command line, where, and like, it's just like, oh, come on, dude, I thought you'd be more nuanced than this. But to give him credit, like, when I saw the video, he was, you know, it's just Linus, he's a bit whiny, I think, but like, he's just very opinionated, and he does make some good points, you know, once in a while. You know, for the most part, I thought it was all right, but I just find the whole concept of it being a challenge a little bit dickish, though. Like, I think, like, if you really want to actually genuinely explore Linux as a daily driver OS or as a gaming OS, then just do it. Like, don't make a fucking stupid clickbaity challenge out of it. That's my only issue.
I think challenge is fine, but you should be aware of the fact that you should be aware of the fact that you are challenging yourself. You cannot come, like, okay, so he's used to Windows. He's very good at using Windows, but he can't apply the same skill set to Linux. It's like you are used to driving a pickup truck around all day, and then suddenly you sit into a Ferrari and you think, okay, I'm just going to be double clutching on the Ferrari and doing all the things that the pickup truck I'm just going to drive the Ferrari like I drive my pickup truck. That
is Linux the Ferrari and Windows is the pickup
Linux
truck?
Linux is the Ferrari and Windows is the pickup truck, you know. And if anybody in our audience owns a Ferrari, they would tell you that that's not easy maintenance, right? So you do need either a good team of people or and a massive budget, or you need to get your hands dirty. If you own a Ferrari, it's not like, I think, anyway, I've never owned one, obviously, but I think it's not like having a Skoda, you know, that you take to a service once a year and it kind of works all the time. It's more hands-on, and so is Linux. But anyway, yeah, carry on. Sorry, I kind of interrupted there.
It's okay. It's all valuable background context.
from my point of view, I'm okay with the you might say that I'm being too lenient on Linus, but from my point of view, the challenge is perfectly and utterly fine. I mean, I guess that he's doing it in an entertaining way as well, but there's a core nugget of him just saying, okay, here's me, here's my experience. I'm sat down in front of a Linux computer. How could my experience of using computers help me get through this, and what would I learn during the process? It's not like to say of he's closed-minded and he's thinking, I'm never going to learn during this experience, and I'm just going to compare it like for Windows, and if it doesn't match Windows, then I'm not going, this is going to be a bad challenge for me. He's approaching it in a neutral way. From my read of it, is that he's approaching it from a completely and utterly neutral way, and he will give Linux kudos where Linux where it's due, and he will give criticism where it's due. And he said repeatedly, admittedly, I don't think that he kind of has. I'm not saying he's doing it deliberately, but he kind of has to be prompted to do it, because there's been a couple of occasions where Luke has said, oh, but you criticize Windows as well, or something like that. And he's like, oh, yeah. Like, Windows has a lot of shit that frustrates the hell out of me as well. But I kind of feel bad, or it's conveyed in a bad way that he kind of has to be prompted to say that. But I don't think he's being disingenuous. I think he just, sometimes he just, yeah, it just, from a PR point of view, the fact that Luke kind of has to prompt him and says, oh, but Linux is, or Windows is bad as well. And Linus is like, oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I think he's being genuine when he says, yeah, Windows is jank as well for different reasons. I think it's a good thing that they're doing the challenge. A bit critical of the fact that they kind of soft just acknowledged the fact that they said, oh, yeah, we're doing this from a gaming point of view. And somebody, I think, asked that question, and they said, oh, could you not just do regular, like, using a computer things like spreadsheets and opening up a web browser and that kind of thing? And I think Linus is like, oh, but that wouldn't be a challenge. I fully expect Linux to be able to do all of those things. That wouldn't be a challenge. I'm deliberately trying to challenge the operating system, which in a way I can see where he's coming from, but the fact that he doesn't seem to acknowledge that as much, especially for the lack of literacy, Linux literacy in his audience, because it's all Windows gaming, hardware enthusiastic audience. Some of them may not be completely and utterly aware of the fact that, yeah, you can install Linux and do all of your regular things like your office suite and all of that stuff, it can do all of that stuff perfectly fine. And Linus seems to be not, seems to be, he seems to think that acknowledging that seems to be boring for whatever reason.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking, was like, that. That's, I think, my main issue when you see anybody trying out Linux for the first time, context is always huge, because he does a really annoying thing on the WAN show, like the clips that I watch. He will basically make some proclamation, like he'll say, for instance, he said, the Linux community needs to stop using the command line as a crutch. And I was like, well, that's a bit provocative. Like, there's a reason for that, you know, and it's like, but then in the next breath he goes on to provide the context for the command line still being necessary for some things, and I was like, why would you say it in such a stupid provocative way and then in the next breath accurately say why that is the case? Like, basically, like the UI is more fragmented, you know, you don't have a certain team all working together on the UI in concert, and you know, you're going to have that fragmentation and you're going to need to fall back to the command line for a few things.
I think he didn't do his research properly. So if you don't want to learn the command line, find a distro that doesn't necessitate you using it. Don't go and if you don't do that, and if you don't know what a distro is and they are different, then don't start, you know. Basically what annoys me is he doesn't know what he's talking about.
I think they fully acknowledge this fact. They said they didn't ask. I think in the very first episode, he says, I could have used industry contacts, and then like there's a screenshot of Windows saying hello or something like that, or internal resources, i.e. Anthony. They fully say that this is our own individual thing. We're not going to do a ton of research beforehand in order to prep ourselves going into this challenge. They fully acknowledge that fact, and they said that I think in the latest one they said maybe after we've done all the challenge episodes, maybe there should be an extra episode of people who know their shit in relation to Linux, as in Wendell, Anthony, maybe Jason Evangelo. I'm actually surprised he mentioned Jason Evangelo, but that was good that he's like, he's aware of people who are standout in the community, and he said maybe we could have these guys on and critique our experience.
Well, yeah, and this is valuable. The fact that he did it, it's valuable because it shows us what a newbie does, right? He comes, and this is normal. This is not just Linux, it's everywhere. People are like this, right? You come somewhere, you look at something you've never seen, or never, you know, relatively speaking, never seen, and say, oh, this is bullshit. It doesn't work like what I'm used to. I'm going away. I'm going to throw my toys into the canal and go away. Not exactly what he's doing, right? He's still sticking to it and everything. But, and that's the problem, okay? So the whole thing is a perception. Command line or no command line. You can find a distro like Elementary that doesn't need a command line at all. But if you do go and get something that necessitates the use of command line, and something tells you don't do X because you'll break it, and then you still do it, that's on you, right? You have to, unless you go to a store, buy something with Linux on it and with support, and where you can count on people walking you through things for your money, then like going around and throwing statements like the Linux community has to do X, the Linux community must do this, mustn't do this. Like, what do you expect to be done? First off, command line interfaces are easier to develop, right? So they are always going to be the cheaper option, and they can be just as good. Also, who is the Linux community? The Linux community is a collection of individuals. Yeah. We don't collectively do anything except for using Linux.
You hit the nail on the head with that.
And also, I unlike you two guys, I don't actually have problem with him trying games. I think there's value for him saying what Luke did. Like, these are 20...
I don't have any issues with him either.
If what Luke did says, I found 20 most popular games on Twitch, and I'm just going to go through them and see how they work on Linux. That's very good. Like, that's actually information people need to know ahead before they get in. If they are coming from, if they are coming here for gaming, they need to know if things work. And ProtonDB might not be giving them the full picture, because ProtonDB is for people who are informed. But what I'm saying is, Linux is a tool. Unless somebody makes it work for you, you need to make it work for yourself. That's the same with Windows. If you were put in front of a computer with no hard drive, operating system, and given a USB stick with Windows on it, and be let on your own, having not seen this before, you'd run into the same issues. It might not be the command line, it might be some GUI, but the GUI would be impenetrable for you, the same way the command line is for him. So what I'm thinking here is, not that Linux is bad, or it's not overly good either, but it's no worse than Windows in the user experience. It's all just perception. It's like, I expect the command line to be a failure mode on Windows, hence whole Linux is failure mode, because that it gives me the command line, that means something's failed, which is not how Linux works. Not most Linux anyway. Some Linux does, right? So it's a matter of perception, and where he fails is that he needs to acknowledge that this is just, oh no, he doesn't need to do anything. He's his own man, right? But what I think he should do is to acknowledge that he is approaching something he doesn't necessarily know much about, and try to apply his relatively big experience somewhere else onto it. And you can't compare the two. You cannot compare your Windows usage with your Linux usage. What you can do is saying, I want to do X, and I'm just going to stick to it. I want to be able to use my NVIDIA graphics card, or the 27,000 graphics cards he's got in his PC or whatever. Can I do this on Linux? But in that case, you should actually ask Anthony, or whoever other expert he's got there, because he's doing something that he built himself. So the PC that he has is not something that you can go to Best Buy and just get for $300, right? That's something that he built himself, and he put Windows on it, and he can make it work because he has got quite an experience. So if he's trying to achieve the same on Linux, he should ask an expert. And then once he has all the drivers, everything works properly, then he should try. Install Steam, download the games, install this store or EA store or whatever store. Do the games work as expected? Can I just plug in my controller? That's the comparison he can do. But I don't think he's qualified to do a comparison between Windows usage and Linux usage.
But that's not the challenge. They openly admitted the fact that in the very first episode, they said, I could have asked people, but were deliberately not doing that.
Exactly, he's doing the challenge wrong.
No, I'm not saying it's not wrong per se. They've put the parameters, the restrictions of the challenge up front. Whether you agree with those limitations or not, where they're working within. He's not allowed ask Anthony. He would consider that cheating as part of the challenge.
Yeah. See, this is the root of my issue. First of all, he's going top shelf use case for Linux. This has only really existed in some way for about the last 5 years. Like, you could only reasonably game AAA games in the last, that only came about very, very recently for Linux. Like, and it's probably single-handedly because of Valve. And so you're just seeing the effects of one single vendor putting their chips on Linux, to use, I don't know, a gambling analogy, and putting their chips down for Linux and back in that platform. And all this has just happened from one company doing that. And I think that's so impressive. This is what I find so silly about the challenge. It's like, first of all, you're going for a use case of Linux that has only existed for a very short time, really, if you think about it. And what it's already capable of is already amazing, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's just super impressive what's happened with Linux gaming lately, and I think everyone should be applauded for all their work there. And then, fucking, not to be cynical here, but I can't help it, but then RGB boy comes in, and he's like, oh, everyone says you can game perfectly on Linux, I'm gonna, like, throw down the gauntlet and, like, challenge this. And it's like, dude, if it can do anything in this respect, it's already amazing. Like, why do you have to like kick it while it's down, you know?
No, I get where he's coming from, but
why not use all the resources he has available? No. That's what I'm saying. Why make this stupid ass challenge? Why not go around to all the people who are experts in this stuff in his office and use his incredible resources and actually give it a good faith college try and make it work well and show how you can make it work well? That is like this challenge aspect to it is just completely unhelpful, and it's just pushing all tropes of Linux, and I just think it's silly. I'm gonna keep watching it, and I've no issue, and I understand, but yeah, just the whole challenge aspect, rather than actually just do a series exploring gaming on Linux and how it would work and how you can do it in a practical sense, I think that would be far more helpful to everyone. And I don't know, yeah, I just find that I'm not that angry about it. I don't really get that angry about things on the internet anymore, my opinion is that, yeah, I'll watch the challenge, it's entertaining, it's interesting to see how they do all this, but I just feel like making a challenge out of it just really wasn't necessary, and it really doesn't help anyone.
I disagree. I would say that, admittedly, look, you're right, there is scope for a challenge or a channel of his size doing the thing that you were saying. Let's sit down, let's show what Linux is good for, what Linux is bad for. I don't think that he's the right person within his staff to do that. I think Anthony should be doing that. They have introduced some videos of Anthony saying, hey, so here's a thing, it's called Linux, and this is how you do it. And is it a replacement for Windows? In a way, it is. In other ways, it's not. It depends on, yeah, like approaching it from that point of view. Anthony's totally the person who can do that, and he's very good at it. He's a very good on-camera personality and everything like that. So they could do like a series of videos with Anthony's, like, here's Anthony's tips for Linux or something like that. I do not think that Linus is the person to do that at all. Nor do I think this challenge is a bad thing, because here is a company that is making bold statements. Valve is making bold statements when they're releasing the Steam Deck. They're saying, this will play your games. And he's approaching going,
will it?
Right. So here's a big industry like giant that is Valve in the gaming industry, and their release in the future could be 6 months time, or whenever they're saying it's going to be ready, whenever they release it, they're releasing a piece of hardware that is running this software, and they're saying this piece of software is not Windows but will run your Windows games. This is a bold statement coming from Valve, and there's Linus saying, okay, let's see how valid that is currently. That is where I'm coming from that point of view. And positive things have already resulted from it. They've said, okay, the Linux distros have said, okay, as part of his failings in the challenge, we're going to address how usable our operating system is, where have been the pain points. So it's good to have somebody that's completely removed from the a Linux community and has such a big following on YouTube say, I know very little about Linux, I've this massive audience, how does this Linux work for me? I do not think it's a bad thing at all.
So you're saying that what he did, and that's true, like what he did had effect after Bob OS fixed that, whatever it was, and KDE is going to end Plasma 5.24. Discover won't let you uninstall Plasma, which is a good thing unless you want to uninstall Plasma, right? So, but you might still able to be doing it, that you will still be able to do that from the command line, which is why the command line obviously has to stay. Also, like, this triggered a lot of people, me included. And like in the end, it doesn't matter. The people who this is the most informative for, I think, is Valve, because they got a lot of pre-testing here for free as well, unless they paid for it, which I don't think they did, right? So they got a lot of, all right, so A, this is how people are going to approach our stuff, if they didn't know this already, and B, these things can break. Even though, unlike what Linux does, Valve are going to be selling you actual integrated software with hardware, so that's a different thing, right? So that's assuming that that won't fail horribly as like your own install can. And they also get
to pause you briefly. I believe they're doing something similar to what you're running with Silverblue.
I mean, they are going to be, it's going to be an immutable system that you can unimmute if you drop into the developer options and so on. But like, once you do that, obviously you should be aware of the fact that you are going into place where the support kind of ends, I'd imagine. I don't know. But if the fact that they are actually selling you a hardware and all the software that it comes with is tested, and the use cases should be tested as well. So that's a kind of different situation from what Linus does now, because he took his bespoke PC and try to install Linux on it, which, you know, also valuable. I'm not saying this challenge is valuable to us. It's just the tone of it is a bit outrageous, at least, well, or maybe not outrageous, but a bit triggering, right? On the other hand, like, I think me and the rest of the internet, the Linux internet, need kind of chill. No one's going to take our command line away because it's...
The Linux operating system can be run headless on a server.
Yeah,
so it's fundamentally part of it. There's no way you're going to take
even for things that that actually can have a graphical user interface. A lot of people just don't want to make one because it's expensive to make or too costly in time and stuff. A lot of people like using the command line, like I do for certain tasks. Would I be happy if I had to?
Yeah, and they're perfectly all right. Yeah,
would I be happy if I had to run a command whenever I want to connect to Wi-Fi? No, of course not. Would I be happy if somebody took my command line spreadsheets away? Of course, I would be extremely unhappy. So there is a balance to be stricken. There is a bit of, like, the community isn't a one person, so the community can't really do anything. Like, we can do what you described, Connor, there, or we, you know, the distro maintainers and the people who make software can decide, okay, maybe I need to spend more time on user experience, or maybe I need to spend more time on actually making the interfaces usable. And by the way, if anybody follows Pointy Sticks, I forget what the guy's name is, but, you know, this week in KDE, it's full of user experience enhancements. You know, so there is a lot of work put into it, and the tone. I still find the tone that Linus chose a bit on the other side of constructive where I'd like it to be, but in the end, like, what's gonna happen? You know, there's no one is setting Linux on fire, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess it's not a huge deal, I guess, but I think, you know, it depends what his aim is. I mean, I think if he wants to make something entertaining that people will tune into, he's succeeded, because I'm waiting for the videos every day because I just want to see how they go. I want to see the things I'm familiar with on this channel. Because it's just cool.
I think it's a very interesting challenge because I think he's saying, is Linux ready for non-Linux people, essentially? Here's me, who's a non-Linux person. How can I get by doing things? And he said, admittedly, I'm a very technical person. I have a lot of experience using computers, just not a lot of experience using Linux. It's the same thing of we're all Linux enthusiasts, so we're not the target audience for this.
Okay, so yeah, that was our commentary on Linus Tech Tips Challenge. If you'd like to get in touch with the Linux Lads, go to linuxlads.com/contact. You'll find our Telegram, our Twitter, our Mastodon there, all that good stuff. Mainly, you can get us on Telegram, Mastodon, Twitter, and Matrix. If you'd like to donate, you can go to linuxlads.com/donate, or you can get a mug or a t-shirt or something in exchange for that, for some money, at linuxlads.com/store. You can also, what else can you do?
We're on Ko-fi or Ko-fi. Recently, I've updated it and I put some sensible basic tiers in there. There's always been one-off donations, but if you want to do recurring donations, I've set some very basic sensible tiers, like €3 a month. I've set up as a tier of, if you want to buy one of us a coffee once a month, you can do that. €5 or dollars a month, you could buy us a beer, and I've set up some basic tiers for that. So yeah, if you want to set up some reoccurring payments, you can do that on Ko-fi or coffee, or how you pronounce it.
Ko-fi, I don't know.
For a mere cup of coffee a day, Shane will mint his own NFT.
So it's good to have all three of us back on the mic for a change.
Until next time.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Laters.